This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And welcome to the show where bad ideas are presented, dissected, reassembled, or at least they are attempted to go through that process in just 10 very, very short minutes. Zach, Sarah, how are you guys doing today?
Doing great.
Yeah, can't complain.
Well, let's see if we can still say that at the end of the
show.
Well,
I can still say that because I have the first idea. So I know what's
coming.
Oh,
yeah.
Guys, this is just great. I love everything about this idea. I have no notes for it. I hope that you enjoy it too. It is from the Traverse City Record Eagle, which is a paper in Michigan. And I'm just going to read the headline because I love it. Seawind Saga. Pilot who crashed in Lake Michigan had 7 crashes in 7 days.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
So
just like this man should probably not be flying planes.
He's an exceeding professional at crashing.
This is like Frank Lapidus or something.
So here we go. A small amphibious airplane is on the bottom of Lake Michigan after crashing during the 4th of July weekend, but fasten your seatbelts because the pilot says how it got there is one barnstormer of a story. The article writer clearly had fun.
What's the tweet from last year that got turned into a movie that is like, get ready for a story. It has a lot of suspense and something. It's a long story, but it's a lot of suspense.
I don't remember. Dennis Collier, a licensed Traverse City pilot, paid $110,000 for the 2010 Seawind, which is an airplane, on Saturday, ended up in the drink a week later, and on the way crashed by his own account 7 times in 7 days in 4 states. Quote, "Oh yeah, it's a hell of a story," Collier said of his plan to fly solo from the West Coast to Boyne City. Mm-hmm. "From California to the UP, everyone kept telling me I was lucky to be alive. I agree with them, sir." Collier wanted to capture the experience while it was fresh in his mind, so he wrote a first-person account in case it had any motion picture potential. On June 25th, Collier flew commercial, landing
I just want to be clear. Right now, the crash count is at 0.
So we are beginning. Crash count is at 0. The commercial airplane landed at LAX.
Success. Okay, success. Great.
Yes. Where Lynn Swan, the retired pilot, airplane builder, and self-described grumpy old man who'd advertised the Seawind 3000 for sale, was there to meet him. The two aviators drove east from Los Angeles to the foothills of the San Gabriel Mountains and Brackett Field Airport. It was here where Collier got his first gander at his new/used Seawind. At the time, he was just excited about the purchase, but later said he didn't think the condition of the plane had been properly conveyed to him. Collier said in his diary he did notice instruments and other repairs were needed and surmised Swan's used Collier's $4,000 deposit to make some, but not all of these. So, crash number one. Quote, "I radioed the tower for a test flight over the airport," Collier wrote. "Climbing to 500 feet above pattern altitude, doing left-hand turns, staying within the airport's landing pattern. At the first turn, I noticed the nose up without inputs. I set up for landing after the third time around. FAA records show Collier landed gear up, and while he escaped, which means that the landing gears were not down so that they catch the runway, they were up inside the plane.
Oh, boy.
And so while he escaped injury, the Seawind got pretty banged up.
I see.
Swan said that it would have been worse if he hadn't installed a block of wood under the front of the plane, and that solid 2 inches of oak took the brunt of the impact. I feel tremendously better. Crashes 2 and 3. Next stop was a layover in New Mexico and Collier's first night landing in 20 years. It was 3:22 a.m. and the descent did not go well. The airplane stalled and came down hard and to the left of the runway and into the weeds and bumpy sage grasses, Collier said. Dawn broke the next morning on an ugly view. Collier, who had again escaped injury, learned that he'd wiped out a sign and some runway lights and did a number on the Sea Wind's tail. Plus, staff with Four Corners Airport in San Juan County had called the FAA. A test flight ended in another runway incident, said Mike Lewis, airport manager. On July 2nd, Collier was airborne again. Crashes number 4 and 5. Quote, my plan was to go north along the western slope of the Rockies to avoid the approaching front from Taos, New Mexico, to Chicago, and east was not the way to get over the mountains, Collier said. He ran into a rain squall, but the plane performed well enough for Collier to engage the autopilot, using rivers and highways as navigational aids, turning east after about 2 hours in the air. Slicing through America's breadbasket, however, Collier again encountered trouble. The left wing servo, or hinge tab, was stuck, he said, and the nose of the plane kept pitching up. When it got worse, Collier put a rag between his knees and the yoke, or the steering wheel of the plane, and pushed as hard as he could towards Nebraska. There was stalling, there was skipping, and there was crisscrossing the runway, but after 4 attempts, Collier said he landed at O'Neill Municipal Airport in Holt County, Nebraska.
But did he land, or did he crash land?
I forced it to the ground and off into the grasses, wow, and eventually back onto the runway and taxied to an awaiting golf cart and an airport manager and wife team that got me to calm down from shaking, Collier said. Whoa. A test flight ended in another crash, Collier said, but he went back to work on the plane and found and fixed some crossed wires. By July 3rd at 7 a.m., Collier was more than ready to put Nebraska below and behind him. 5 hours out of Nebraska, he passed Escanaba and saw Schoolcraft County Airport at Manistique, about 5 miles off. Then something went clunk. Crash number 6. So the hydraulic pressure gauge was registering 0, Collier said, and the fuel gauge showed an uneven supply. He radioed the airport to ask whether there was a spotter on the ground who could look up as he passed and let him know if his landing gear was down. The answer was no response.
Of course.
Quote, I landed it with both mains and held it off as long as I could, and then the nose hit and the plane skidded down the runway a few hundred yards to a stop at the edge of the pavement, but well before the end of the runway, Collier said. After a week of bumps, clunks, and official inquiries from both the land and the air, Collier was finally near his goal, landing his plane in Boyne City.
God.
Crash number 7. Plane was headed south over Lake Michigan, Beaver Island, Charlevoix, and land at the Boyne City Municipal Airport. Per his promise to the FAA, Collier wrote in his diary that he'd leave the landing gear down for the 25-minute flight. He wouldn't put it back up because he was having problem with his hydraulics. At 7:22 p.m., FlightAware, an air travel data place, shows the Sea Wind over Manistique. At 7:49 p.m., the plane disappears from the radar. That was about the time Collier saw the engine sputtered and he smelled something burning.
Mm. Ooh.
I glanced back over the water and realized I could judge my altitude by the glittering of the sun over the small ripple of the water, Collier said, somewhat poetically. Time seemed to slow, and I was transfixed on the beauty of the sun over the water. I could see it coming, and it was really close. But per his promise to the FAA, the landing gear was still down. Mm-hmm. The gear caught in the water, and the plane went forward and with a big splash went nose down vertically and into the water. For a few seconds, Collier said he was staring straight down into the deep. Then the plane popped up. Collier sent a distress call, checked himself for injuries, again none, and tried to focus. The plane was built like a boat. It would float, right? He'd wait for rescue, get the plane to shore, and fix it again. Collier isn't sure how much time passed before he saw a U.S. Coast Guard rescue boat headed his way. By then, the cockpit was full of water, the plane was sinking, his shoes, hat, landing light, and new headset were floating away, reminiscent of a scene from Titanic. A Coast Guard helicopter circled over his head. Collier was by now perilously perched on top of the tail of the plane. He lifted the head from his hands and gave them a wave. Minutes later, he was aboard a rescue boat. He said he was happy to be alive. There's a little bit more about this gentleman reflecting on his adventures, but I think I have taken enough of your time. I'm going to put 10 minutes on a timer. This is just an incredible story, and I wonder what you'll do with it.
So the bad idea here is like giving this man an aviation license, right? Like, kind of like, what yeah. is the...
Or not taking it away, like, earlier, at least, like, let's say,
by crash number three, you know?
Yeah.
Like, maybe deciding...
Three strikes? Three crashes?
It's maybe not... This plane maybe needs to stay and be repaired, and I'll take any other plane to where I need to go.
Yeah. What was he trying? Like, was he trying to make a specific trip? Was he trying yeah. to break a record?
So he was trying to get to, I think in the idea, he should be maybe trying to break a record, but he was just trying to get to a place called Boyne City was where he was trying to go.
All this trouble for Boyne City, really?
Okay, I know. Sure. Yeah.
Fine. Why not? Let's get jiggy. I mean, so it's one of these things where it's like, it's tough because the intuitive answer is you just film that shit. Like, you know, like he is already kind of this larger than life, almost Darkwing Duck-esque character.
Mm-hmm. He is Darkwing Duck in a person, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
The bad idea I would posit, perhaps, that the stealth bad idea in this is him mm-hmm. keeping a diary in case what's happening to him
is the option for a movie.
That's funny.
Yeah. Like, I think that's interesting and
yeah.
funny.
No, that's really, that is quite good. And so, yeah, I also agree, Sarah, that like the setting around the crashes needs to be something a lot more dangerous or a lot yeah. more. Like, you know, like he needs to be like someone flying refugees back and forth in World War II or something. Not exactly that. But like, you know, he needs to be kind of in a setting where the last thing on your mind should be, I'm going to do intentionally dangerous things, document them
yeah.
for my personal glory. Like, this is kind of like, at least this is bonkers, but it is still like pretty low stakes. Like, I'm kind of like, is there some version of it where he could be doing this in a place where it would be deeply inappropriate, even more so, to be doing something like this, to be trying to, like, make himself out to be the hero when he just clearly does not have the, I don't know what you would call it, the ability, the capacity, the faculties to be this heroic character that he clearly yeah. wants to be?
Yeah. No, I mean, just like the stubbornness is real impressive. Yeah.
It's like admirable and then it's foolish. And then it kind of like keeps going and comes back around to being kind of admirable,
it's
even though I don't want it to be.
It's just a spectacle at a certain point. It's like, my dude, do anything else.
Do anything else.
Insanity is this doing the same thing over and over,
over
again.
And over again, expecting a different result. Yeah, that's right.
And insanity is also... media, and I wonder at what yeah. point in this man's flying career if we were I guess back in the early aughts, the producers of Jackass wouldn't take notice and make a job offer.
Oh, that's interesting. Someone who like gets some notoriety for doing something incredibly stupid and then tries to make that their brand?
Well, I think the idea is that they are woefully
just
incompetent.
The Paul brothers?
I think they're woefully incompetent and somebody like is basically making career, like is sort of the kingmaker of incompetence. And this person gets sort of roped in to this awfulness. Like instead of being punished or rather just, you know, sort of grounded for mm-hmm. their inability to fly planes, somebody comes along and is like, you're perfect.
Oh, interesting. So is it they get sort of Svengali'd into it? Or is there like a class of pilot's license where if you've crashed enough times, you get like, you know, the green license, which is like, whatever happens to you, you deserve it.
So I think it would be this, like we open the scene on like they're like his totaled plane is behind him. The like fire department police are all there. He's like, you know, basically like, all right, here's your court date. Like kiss that license mm-hmm. goodbye. This is crash number 7 in 7 days. He's like, I can't like afford to like defend myself in court. And somebody kind of swoops in and is like, those legal bills handled. Like, okay. your license, we know exactly how to keep this going. You know, we can drag this out in court for years. You'll effectively never have to worry about your license. You just have to sign here. And the sign here is like, you are now a reality show star.
Buffoon.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly. And like a sort of unintentional, who is that like death-defying character from
Evel Knievel.
Evel Knievel. Right.
I like this in general. I think that like my adjustment would be, as presented in the original story, I think that they would need to be very carefully finessed by the people that are doing this, because mm-hmm. I don't think that this character would ever agree to anything that was like, we want to document your crashes. It would need to sort of be like, we think that you are a fucking blue-striped American hero, and we want to document your heroics, because when you heroism, it is so heroically heroic. And they'd be like, I'm glad someone finally noticed.
And then are they put in a situation where they have to be genuinely heroic and fuck that up?
I think that, yeah, like, so I think that it might be kind of one of these, like, the producers fully expected to stay in the realm of, like, he is just doing these things off on his own, and the only person mm-hmm. that he is endangering is themselves.
Is himself.
And the camera sure. crew who have all, like, signed waivers. But then, like, mid, like, you know, flying to someplace, they get a call on the radio that is like, alert, alert. The orphanage where little Timmy lives is burning down. We need mm-hmm. help to, like, you know, have someone bring water over. And all of a sudden, it's kind of like, well, that sounds like a, you know, call for insert whatever the name of this pilot is. And the camera crew's like, wait, what is happening? What are we doing? And yeah, and I think that, like, bolstered by the attention that these people have given him, he would then try to do more foolishly heroic things, I would say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Does he succeed at them? I hope not.
I think that everyone is miraculously unscathed, but he clearly makes the situation worse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, it is one of those, like, fire department successfully evacuates building. Everyone very clearly says that operation, which was carried out in 2 hours, would have been over in 15 minutes if not for bumbling pilot's interference or something like that.
Yeah, landing in the playground was a bad idea.
Right. I don't know that anyone is, like, ever, like, super badly hurt, or if anyone mm-hmm. is hurt, it is only comedically hurt. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't think that he ever really helps.
That makes sense.
But, of course, he collects the newspaper clippings, and it's kind of like, you know, orphanage saved. And everyone is like, can we read the article? And he's like, no, you cannot.
So with about a minute left, does this person develop any self-awareness ever, or dies tragically at the end?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's let him live.
Yeah.
And he discovers the virtues of flight simulators.
And incredible.
Retires to a basement somewhere.
Right. Someone challenges him to become like the all-time high scorer on Microsoft Flight Simulator. Mm. And that becomes his new obsession. Like, that's how they finally get him off the skies.
I love it. Yeah. And he can stream it, so he can still be famous.
And I do think that, like, he does do something at the end of the movie or the story or whatever it is, where he does do something that is genuinely heroic and genuinely does save the day.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that this will happen. Like, he makes a choice. It totals his plane. Like, sure. The plane is destroyed. Like, he is left planeless by the first genuinely helpful and genuinely heroic thing that he does.
Well, that's time. We end on planeless, which I love.
And then, you know, like, someone close to him, his girlfriend, his whoever, is like, you know, to thank you for that good deed, we bought you a present. And he's like, a new plane. They're like, nope, that shit's expensive. Nope. Also, lots of other reasons. Here, we bought you Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Which is also expensive, but in a different category.
In a different way,
expensive.
Yeah. but as a smaller blast radius.
Yeah.
Whew.
Wow. Well done, guys.
Jesus Christ. I don't know if he's mighty, but what a man. What a man. Yeah.
What a man.
Colorful character. I hope he's okay.
Seems like he's okay.
Perhaps more importantly, I hope everyone around him is okay.
Let's start there and work backwards.
And it seems like that is also the case. First responders are great. Awesome. Love first responders. Good. Cool. I'm going to go play some Microsoft Flight Simulator. But when I get back, do you guys want to do more bad ideas?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hello there, Zach Valenti jumping into this episode with this brief reminder that we have an active Patreon page to support the production of No Bad Ideas and all the other crazy worlds we're building behind the scenes. To check that out, scope the sweet rewards we offer for monthly subscriptions, as well as how to sign up yourself. Head on over to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. Once more, that's nobadideaspodcast.com/support. If you already support the show, we so appreciate that. And regardless, thank you for listening. All right, let's get back to more No Bad Ideas.
And welcome back, everybody. I am delighted to be the badness bringer of this half of No Bad Ideas this week. Are y'all ready for some weird news from HuffPost?
So ready.
Okay, hit us.
Link in the description for this wild legal ruling. Court rules, okay. Pablo Escobar's cocaine hippos are legally people.
Zach. The idea of the show is bad ideas. This is a good idea. This is a very, very good idea with no repercussions.
I'm just curious about the context of this because we've featured the cocaine hippos.
These hippos.
They keep showing up on this show. They're old friends at this point. But I'm curious what necessitated this ruling.
Well, more than 80 hippos previously owned by Colombian drug lord Pablo Escobar have a unique distinction in U.S. law. They are the first non-human creatures to be legally considered people.
Of course, they are not in the U.S.
No.
Let's find out.
But I'm not surprised why a U.S. court is making this. Anyway, continue.
The U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Ohio recognized the late Escobar's infamous cocaine hippos as legal persons for the first time in the United States. The ruling on October 15th came on the same day the Animal Legal Defense Fund filed an application on behalf of the hippo plaintiffs in Colombia, intended to stop that country's government from killing the animals.
Oh, that's right, because they're spreading.
Exactly.
And it's fucking up
and they
the
are
ecosystem.
Very dangerous.
They're very dangerous,
exactly.
Too.
Yep. The ALDF announced the decision in a news release Wednesday. The hippos are descendants of four illegally imported by Escobar. They were set free after his death in 1993. Since then, the hippos have increased their number to more than 80, and they are reportedly wreaking havoc on the local ecosystem.
And anyone that gets too close.
However, some scientists have argued that they may actually be restoring ecological functions lost for thousands of years due to human-driven extinctions. In July, Colombian attorney Luis Domingo Gomez Maldonado filed a lawsuit on behalf of the animals to save them from being killed, saying that sterilization was a better option, according to Newsweek.
If you can get to them.
Exactly. Although Colombian law gives non-human creatures legal standing to bring lawsuits to protect their interests, that country's legal system cannot compel someone in the U.S. to produce documents supporting their case. However, a U.S. law allows interested persons in Colombia to go to a U.S. federal court to seek the ability to obtain documents and testimony. So the ALDF applied for the hippos' rights to compel two Ohio wildlife experts who study non-surgical sterilization to provide testimony on behalf of the plaintiffs. By granting the application, the district court recognized animals as legal persons for the first time in U.S. history. Quote, it's obvious that animals actually do have legal rights. For example, the right to not be cruelly abused or killed. But a legal right is only as valuable as one's right to enforce that legal right. Christopher Berry, the attorney overseeing the U.S. case, who also serves as managing director at the Animal Legal Defense Fund, told Gizmodo, "The legal system doesn't have precedent for animals' interests directly appearing in court. There's no precedent for animals having a legal standing to enforce their own rights." The ALDF news release Wednesday said that the testimony of wildlife experts Elizabeth Berkeley and Richard Berlinski would be used to support use of a contraceptive called PZP. ALDF communications officer Elizabeth Putish told HuffPost on Thursday that just before its application was granted, the Colombian government announced it had already started giving the hippos a drug called Gonacon. But the ALDF experts in the court case had instead recommended the contraceptive PZP as more appropriate for hippos. Putish said Wednesday's ruling will allow the organization to collect more testimony from experts on the most effective and safest form of sterilization for the hippopotamuses. The ALDF is also continuing to monitor the situation to ensure that none of the hippos are killed. ALDF Executive Director Stephen Wells said in the release on Wednesday that the animals have the right to be free from cruelty and exploitation, and the failure of the U.S. courts to recognize their rights impedes the ability to enforce existing legislative protections. He calls the court order a critical milestone in the broader animal status fight to recognize that animals have enforceable rights. And with that, I put 10 minutes on the clock.
And all seems very legit to me.
Yeah, just to back up just a second. So yes, the filing in the U.S. is to obtain expert testimony about the kind of contraceptive that they should be giving the hippos to sterilize them.
Yes.
Instead of killing them, correct?
Yes. And in order to do any of this legally, apparently they need to have the rights of human beings and thus be legally recognized as persons so that any of this can get done through the legal frameworks involved.
I'm kind of shocked this hasn't come up in the U.S. yet.
That's the badness, in my opinion, is that, like, until 2021, we've never had a way to sort of enforce protections on animals. And before we made animals persons legally, we made corporations persons legally. Like, this is an interesting phenomenon.
Okay.
And I see what you mean. This is obviously a good idea, good news for the hippos. But I think it draws out the badness that has been in the background of our legal unconsciousness.
Sure. And potentially also bad news for Colombia,
yes,
where the hippos are.
Although, it seems that there is some amount of debate about
for Colombian hippo Rambo,
are
yes,
a long-term bad or a long-term good thing for Colombia.
Right.
Yes.
And, like, if the sterilization works, like, I think on a long enough timeline, this will be resolved in a way that does not require, the brutal hunting.
Does not require murder.
Exactly.
Yeah. Especially because I think that, like, the hippo's position on murder is, like, if you shoot for the head, you better not miss.
Yeah,
like,
no,
you
that's
know?
The thing.
Yeah.
They don't fuck around. They're very
no.
dangerous.
They're incredibly dangerous animals.
But okay, so are we doing a legal drama or are we doing an animated film about the hippos? This is my question.
So I'm a little bit torn because, I am not immediately drawn towards the animated Madagascar-style movie about hippos.
But you can have Chris Rock star in it. Okay, I rescind the joke.
Yeah, and I guess that would be like the hippos have a very nice life at Mr. Escobar's mansion. Don't ask any questions about how Mr. Escobar got his
well,
money.
You would have
it's
to do something
movie.
Like the... Have you guys ever played the Grant Howitt one-page RPG, The Witch is Dead?
Yeah.
No.
It's where you play as a bunch of witches' familiars who've lived very happily with this witch in her cottage, and then some assholes from town come and murder
and burn
your beloved
the
mistress. And so the animals go on a revenge spree.
Wow.
It's a very fun game. So
wow.
I think that would be the clearly now animation for adults cartoon of the hippo revenge crest.
Well, I think that it's either that or, like, I think that, like, the Disney version of it is they live in a millionaire's house. The millionaire peacefully passes away.
Yes.
And so then they get like evicted, or they get accidentally booted out of the compound.
And have to make it in the jungle.
In the Amazon. Yeah. Like, you know, and like they kind of have to learn how to be. And like, you know, and obviously.
They find a very streetwise constrictor who becomes their friend.
Right.
Yeah.
And like these would need to be hippos that were smuggled to the rich person's compound when they were baby hippos, because they have no memory of living.
They've lived there forever.
Yeah. This is the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
On the other hand, I think that the courtroom drama would be really compelling. I have absolutely nothing to say beyond just make this as a movie. Like, I don't know how to develop it. I don't know enough about the legal system and about like this case to be able to like expound upon it. So I guess I'm kind of leaning towards the animated for adults revenge movie of the hippopotamus seeking justice for Pablo. Which, to be abundantly clear, Pablo does not deserve justice. Pablo is a monster.
No.
Is he dead now?
I think he's dead.
He's in custody.
He's dead.
Yeah, no, okay. El Chapo's alive. Pablo Escobar is dead.
That's right.
Yeah.
As far as we know.
Sure. Until Shamook gets involved, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Or he's been hiding inside the hippos the whole time.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, justice for Pablo, but not really.
But not really. No justice for Pablo.
Right. I mean, and like that would be like the really dark way to go about it. Like the hippos go on a revenge flick for the people that rooted out their like beloved master. And it's only when they're bumping off the last person on their list that they realize
this revealed. Yeah.
Yeah. Like who their beloved master really was.
Yes, exactly.
I guess that's the version of it where like the witch's familiars find out just like how many of the children of the village the witch had lured to her cottage and had snacks when they weren't looking.
And then you have this wonderful interpersonal drama between the hippos, because one of them probably doesn't care.
Sure.
One of them's caught up in it. One of them likes the power. But then another one is like, no, we were doing this for principled reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I find, after all of this murder, still a hole in my heart.
The hole was not filled by murder.
Wild how that didn't work out.
What? Who could have foreseen this?
But then you can have like an Obi-Wan Anakin showdown between the hippos in the middle of the Amazon.
Who's voicing these hippos?
I think H. John Benjamin should play the master.
Oh yeah.
Like, H. John Benjamin should not be a hippo, but should be involved.
I think Justin Roiland could play a hippo.
Oh yeah. He should do more things.
I think Chris Parnell could play a hippo.
Chris, are we just casting the cast of Archer as hippos? Because I'm here for that.
I think, Lucky Yates should play a hippo. But in any case, yeah. Moving on.
Yeah. But Janelle Monáe has only made like nice period movie things. Let's make her a revenge hippo.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's my pitch.
She can be the determined, like, animal control specialist that gets deployed and is hunting the hippos.
That's
even
right.
As they hunt the people that, you know, murdered.
That's right. That's right.
Their beloved master.
Yeah.
What a freaking bizarre turn. Oh my God. This took such a weird life of its own. My God.
Sometimes the ideas, you can't control them.
No.
Much like hippos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know what else to say about this.
No, it's just kind of there, yeah.
We could pivot to doing something else, anything else.
In the 2 minutes we have left, would you like to pivot somewhere else or develop some of the set pieces of this?
No, I guess we should develop some of the set pieces.
I guess they fight a crocodile. Like,
oh yeah, there's for sure a crocodile.
Like, I guess, here's a question, are these more anthropomorphic hippos who can use guns, or are they just as deadly as hippos are?
Oh, no, I think unfortunately, it's like kind of like Madagascar rules.
Gotcha.
Like, they're like a little bit more self-aware, and they can definitely like interface with some technology, but they don't have like hands. Like, they have like, I don't know what you would call what hippos have, hooves?
They have hooves, I guess.
I believe so.
Are they cloven hooves? I don't know.
I don't think so.
We need to go to a zoo. Cool. Yeah, there's some like animal fights. They like They overturn a boat for sure.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
1000% they do that.
Yeah.
Then you can have like just, you know, sort of the expressionistic, the water turning red under the boat. It'd be great.
There's kind of like this sequence where like one of their victims is like on their house and it's like a dark, rainy night.
Mm-hmm.
And the power goes out and they're like, what mm-hmm. is going on? And there's a flash of thunder outside and there's a hippo. And they're like, what the hell was that? And there was another flash of thunder and the hippo was gone. And you're like, where the hell did the hippo go? And you kind of play it as like a little suspense movie. But it's funny because it's this absurdly large, very ungraceful creature.
But it's moving with Batman-like stealth. Absolutely.
That's right.
that's the key here.
That's right. Yes. Yes. It is the world's most ninja hippo.
And I guess it's like the original four hippos. Like it shouldn't be a horde of hippos
unless
that would be funny.
No, absolutely.
No, it's definitely the original.
Cool.
Maybe they have some kids that they need to protect. In the last 10 seconds, what is this called?
Hippo Revenge Quest? Is there a problem with that?
It's what's on the tin. Amazing. And that is time.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Well, holy shit.
Good that animals are getting more standing in court. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. Unlike most of what we just did, which is not good.
Would be very bad.
Well, I will stand by that the cast of Archer should do more things.
Oh, absolutely. They should also have better projects than this we just pitched.
No, they should.
You're not wrong.
Please.
Very silly.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to back away slowly from this one, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else. But join us next week for more No Bad Ideas. This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Jennifer Schneider, Rena Sarame, Jeffrey Felsher, and Dia. Today's episode features music by Stateshire and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating or review wherever you listen and share it with someone you love.